Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast for Saturday, November 1st, 2008, where we're going to go in-depth with the ever-accelerating communication channel Twitter. This is Steve Borsch, and along with my gang cohorts, whom I'll introduce momentarily, I'm very pleased to welcome our special guests today, Rachel Stassenberger. Hello, Rachel.
Hello, thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, you're the Capital Bureau reporter at the St. Paul Pioneer Press, and as I've noticed by poking around before the show, you're a very wired journalist and a very active Twitter user, so that's great. And we also
have all the tools at my disposal.
Excellent, excellent. And we also have on Julio Ojeda Zapata, who's the consumer technology reporter for the Pioneer Press. And as we're going to hear As we're going to hear a little bit later in the show, we're going to zero in after Rachel has to depart. We're going to talk about your book, Twitter Means Business, How Microblogging Can Help or Hurt Your Company.
Yeah, thanks.
And then also our typical pals, we have Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Graham Thickens.
Good morning.
And Phil Wilson.
Good morning, everybody.
Who we found after sitting in the social media breakfast session yesterday, Phil is remarkably witty with all of his...
That and has a short attention span. Yeah. So.
That comic twit stuff doesn't come from nowhere.
That's right. For those of you that don't know about comic twit, that's Phil's effort to put a little levity into Twitter,
it's a beast.
Yeah,
we need it after the world getting invaded by Martians yesterday.
Yeah,
yeah. Did anybody listen to that? It was at midnight, wasn't it?
Well, on Twitter, there were people recreating the Martian invasion in the form of tweets.
Oh, I didn't see that. No, but somebody was, I think a local radio station was playing it at midnight last night. The Orson Welles show. Interesting. No, I didn't know that about Twitter. Well, if we could, let's launch into Rachel and Julio about Twitter initiatives at the Pioneer Press. I mean, how are you, first of all, how did you both get into it? But also, how did it get accepted at the Pioneer Press, and how are you using it? You know, what's positive about it and what's negative? How about if we start with you, Rachel?
Well, actually, the way I got into it was through Julio. So we should probably start with him, because I both blame and credit him for me being on Twitter and now having another thing to obsess about.
Got it. Julio?
Well, I've been using Twitter for a while now. I initially got into it and did research for a story that I did for the paper, and it was one of those things where I played around with it for a while, and I thought, oh, this is really cute. Then I wrote my story and sort of forgot all about it. But then I came back into it, started using it again, and used it long enough that the nicotine got in my bloodstream, and I've been addicted to it ever since. And at one point during our research for my book, which we'll talk about later, I got, you know, so excited about the potential of Twitter in a business context, you know, being used by a variety of companies, that I just happened to, you know, casually mention to my editor, you know, gosh, you know, this Twitter thing's kind of interesting. Maybe we should consider using it. And Tom Flatong, our editor, you know, chewed on that for a while. And then he came back and said, you know, you're right, you know, but we should use this, and we got the RNC coming up. Why don't we get on Twitter as the Pioneer Press and, you know, tweet during the RNC? And I did that, and that actually turned into a whole chapter in my book. And so that's how the, you know, the Pioneer Press on Twitter was born. And now we're in the process of having some conversations about how that, you know, Pi Press, as it were, identity will continue to evolve. You know, we're gonna use it in different ways. We're still trying to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
And then and then conversations around the newsroom ensued. You know, people were intrigued by this sort of thing. They were wondering, well, you know, what the heck is it good for? You know, what can you use it for? And a lot of people are just kind of feeling their way. But Rachel is the kind of person that, you know, she gets these things immediately, and she sort of latches onto them, and her brain starts turning, and then she goes to light speed, you know, warp 5 immediately. And she's been, and I'll let her tell you how she's been using Twitter, but I've been very impressed to watch her.
Thanks, Julio. I actually have two Twitter channels. One is at Poll Animal, P-O-L Animal, which is a second outlet from our political blog, The Political Animal. And on that channel, we have a Twitter feed, which essentially means that every post that goes to the blog is repeated in headline form on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And then I also add other political issues, direct my followers to other things going on, occasionally live tweet from different events to let folks know what the news is. And then the second Twitter channel that I'm kind of excited about is MN Votes. We started it about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, and we're asking all our followers to let us know their voting experience. Were there long lines? Were there bad judges? Was everything smooth and easy? We hope through that we'll get a fuller report than we typically get on Election Day about what exactly people are doing. And I think that MN Votes channel may be one of the ideal uses of Twitter for a news organization, where you can get quick hit news flashes from all over an area.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, as Julio can tell you with the RNC, we don't necessarily rely on Twitter and Twitter alone to source our stories. It's as reliable or as unreliable as anything on the internet. So you still have to do the old shoe leather reporting and make your phone calls and confirm that the reports you're hearing are real. But it seems like a great way to expand our universe.
So are you going to use that Twitter channel as a source for some stories, Rachel?
Absolutely. Again, it's not going to be the only source. But one of the things, for instance, that we do on Election Day every year is we send reporters out all over and ask them to observe different precincts around the metro and around the state. And Twitter allows us to multiply that by human beings. We currently have maybe 40 people following us on MN Votes. We're doing some publicity Monday and Tuesday, which is Election Day, to up that number. But we're not, again, relying solely on MN Votes for any stories, just like we wouldn't rely solely on any kind of source for any story.
Have you had any consideration of with MN Votes about finding a number of folks who you might be able to vet and make sure that their input is breaking, so that you can actually follow up quickly on breaking stories that might be happening at a polling place?
Well, one of the great things about Twitter is it not only allows you to take in and read the feeds, but it does allow you to interact with the people who are feeding your channel or your account. So we can, if I see a feed or a tweet on MN Votes that seems of interest, we can immediately reply, which either everyone will see, or we can send a direct message through Twitter. And since they will be online to send their tweet, they should be online to receive our reply.
Mm-hmm.
And I already have, through something I saw on Twitter, found a source and said, can you direct message me your phone number? A reporter would like to talk to you. And the source immediately did. And then we had a more traditional interview situation. But that was born on Twitter.
Hey, Rachel, I just had a question. What kinds of stories do you expect to get from polling places? I mean, like, okay, there's a long line. Is that a story? What's a story from a polling place?
Well, a couple things we'll be looking for on Election Day is how long were the lines? Were people hanging out and staying in line? Was it a two-hour line, a four-hour line, an eight-hour line? Were there precincts that ran out of ballots? Were there judges that were being... or challengers that were being particularly aggressive? Were there a lot of young people, a lot of old people? Were there cars 3 miles down the road because people couldn't find a place to park? All of those kind of things, again, we traditionally do write about, but sure. Twitter allows us another outlet to take in that information and confirm it.
I imagine there are also problems sometimes with people wearing buttons or wearing T-shirts that promote a certain candidate too close to the polling place and that sort of thing.
Right. And it'll be interesting to see if we get reports about people being turned away or told to take off their T-shirts or and how that plays out. You know, certainly it's the type of thing that, that we do monitor, but Twitter may, and as Julio has said, it's an experiment for us. Twitter may allow us to get more details from more areas than we have reporters to send to.
It's one of those situations where you don't really know what's going to happen. It's just kind of fun to try new things. But that's, you know, that's what Twitter is good for. As you guys all know, if there's a particular event or a topic or something that interests a lot of people, they all hashtag it, and a group conversation ensues. Like, for instance, last night, Martians invaded Earth, for God's sake. And everybody was on their mobile phone sort of, you know, swapping reports about what all the tripods were doing in different cities and the mayhem that ensued. And, you know, it's all fiction, of course. But it last night it was fun to literally watch a Martian invasion of the planet unfold on Twitter. It was gripping stuff. And you know, in the nonfiction world, in the actual world, we're gonna see that happen, hopefully, on November 4th.
I've got a quick question for you, and you alluded to it in one of your answers about it, this being an experiment. So, what are the metrics that you're going to use to say this experiment was a success, or we'll couch this for right now, or what are you going to use as a judge?
Well, frankly, for me, one of the things that I'm very careful about using is my time. If it takes more time than it feels like it's worth, then it won't be a successful experiment. So far, haven't found that it's a huge time suck. I also, I also blog, and I also write stories for the paper, and I also write stories for our website, and I also report. So, you know, that's my most precious commodity. I also think that one of the things we saw during the convention, and Julio was much more intimately involved in this than I was, is that there are misleading reports on Twitter. And again, for me, that goes back to time. If we're chasing down a whole bunch of misleading reports, that's not worth the time that we've invested in it. On the other hand, reporters often will spend time on something that doesn't pan out. So that's a way that we can sort of test it, just like we would test any traditional reporting method.
Okay.
And then the last thing that I've thought about with Twitter is it does help us build a relationship with our readers, which are, you know, for a candidate, it's your constituents. For us, it's our readers. And I have heard from people both through the Paul Animal and through MN Votes where we're having a conversation that we might not otherwise have if not for our Twitter representation. And so some of the feedback I've gotten has been helpful there. Some of the news tips I've gotten has been helpful there. And also on our blog, The Political Animal, I've seen a traffic coming from the Twitter feed, which, you know, again, we're looking for clicks and looking for traffic, and so that's another metric that's helpful to us.
So how does that conversation with readers affect your reporting, Rachel?
I would say, actually, my attitude towards all new media and all the wired journalists that I am is it's the same conversation that I have over the telephone or in person. So it just allows me more sources to go to, more places to look at, and build more relationships in much the same way that I would, you know, using the old dial telephone.
Are you finding that you're getting different sorts of sources using Twitter than you were in the old days just using the telephone?
Yes and no. Some of them are the people that I know through Twitter are people that, frankly, I knew through other sources, many of them online, some of them through the blog. But I think, again, it allows you to expand your universe. As one reporter, if I had to speak to everyone I spoke to in person, I would not be able to speak to that many people in a day. But on Twitter, for instance, on our Paul Animal, I can send out a news blast or a question, and we'll get answers from people who are online at that moment in a way that I simply wouldn't make those phone calls or go out to the coffee shop. So I think that it allows us to do that. And frankly, on just like everything on the internet, it allows you a national reach. So, you know, there are people who are following the blog feed, the Paul Animal feed, who are from Washington, D.C. and from North Carolina. Those are not people that I would bump into at a coffee shop in Minnesota unless they were visiting our fine state.
Yeah, I was just going to ask that, if Twitter expands your geographic reach for sources, or don't you really care about having sources beyond the metropolitan area?
It does expand your geographic reach, but our newspaper and my goal is very much Minnesota-focused. So, well, for instance, one of the things that's been interesting on Twitter, one of the things I track quite carefully is the ads in our Minnesota Senate race. Well, I've been able to hear about ads in the North Carolina Senate race through Twitter, and then followed up with blogs and YouTube and telephone and all sorts of things like that. So I can be able to make comparisons in a quick hit kind of way and follow the path that it leads me down.
Well, I found that one of the most interesting uses of Twitter that I've experienced yet was the real-time nature, or near real-time nature, during the debates, and watching people's comments as certain things were unfolding. And you know, it wasn't the world that I was watching, it was the circle of people that I follow. And so I know, for the most part, know these people or know of these people, and it did change the nature of the impact of certain things that were occurring. And that's can be a good thing, and it was sort of fun, but at the same time, I found that this was not necessarily representative of people that I know or the circle of friends. And sometimes I do get some concern about being in an echo chamber. And is there any of do you think about that? Are you concerned about that when it comes to having input for stories?
Well, again, it would depend on who you're talking to, who you're following, and who's following you. You know, I know, for instance, the Paul Animal feed, which is a bit older than MN Votes, you know, I do have a mix of Republicans and Democrats, and I do have a mix of traditional media and new media on there. So, you know, just like you wouldn't report a story just from one side, you know, I treat Twitter in much the same way, mm-hmm. particularly mm-hmm. with those I'm following. Those who follow me, I obviously have less control over. But I do bear that in mind. And then, you know, one of the other really cool things about Twitter is the election Twitter feed, which is, Julio, correct me, I believe it's election.twitter.com.
Where yeah, I believe so, correct.
It's running commentary from all over the country about the 2008 election, which if you have a spare moment and you log onto there, you will find very quickly that your time has filtered away. And there's a great combination of traditional media, new media, Republicans, Democrats, people who are mainstream, people who are out of the mainstream, mm-hmm. all blasting out their opinions or links to certain things. And it's just fascinating to watch the keywords change on that. And I think you do get a feel for, obviously it's not the entire universe, but a certain universe of folks and what they're feeling about politics, which has been really fascinating and is in some ways kept me abreast of things that I wouldn't typically cover. It doesn't necessarily affect my coverage, but I'm kind of, as you might imagine, a political junkie. So it allows me another outlet for my addiction.
Well, did you ever use Internet Relay Chat, IRC? This was something that started back in the 90s. Well, you know, it's a little too geeky for, I'd say, 95% of the human race. But there are a lot of instant messaging. There are certain clients that you can put in the IRC room and then follow along this real-time chat. And so I started going to conferences several years, you know, 10 years ago, where people were on IRC, but you had to have an internet connection somewhere. And as Wi-Fi began to roll out, people would have these IRC channels open, and there'd be this Twitter-like real-time conversation going on. And I found myself, it was almost more enjoyable to watch the commentary about the speaker than it was to listen to the speaker. which was sometimes a bad thing. But by the same token, when Twitter really started to hit, like you, Julio, I was kind of, I'm not so sure how much I want to invest in this. But I began to find that not just a trade show, but I mean, everything, it seems, more and more people are getting connected, and it's like an IRC channel for the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I've experienced that. I was at Minnesota Public Radio for an event there a few months ago, and wasn't necessarily going as well as the NPR folks had hoped. And you could really detect that because the crowd was turning a little bit on the people on the stage. You could see that happening right on Twitter.
Phil, you were at that, weren't you? Phil?
Sorry about this, Steve. I was on mute. Apologies for that. Yes, I was at that, and it was a very big learning experience for me. It was one of those that was my first adventure in actually twittering while trying to listen to something. Something I probably won't do ever again. I try not to tweet too much in those situations because it distracts me from really being engaged.
Yep.
And I think that's a very good point about Twitter and journalism, which is, personally, my first devotion if I'm at an event is to get the quotes and get the mood for the newspaper. And so I haven't yet, for instance, on the Senate race, I haven't live tweeted any of the debates, although I could, because I want to be fully present. And so I think that's another way we've talked a little bit about using the resource of time and the investment that you want to make. For me, I don't think it's worthwhile to take myself away from an event so that I can Twitter the event. And I think that's similar in other circumstances. You've got to think about your priorities, but Twitter isn't everything, but it can be a useful one of the things.
But it seems like Twitter is replacing live blogging in a lot of cases.
Yes, it
and
certainly
that,
is. In my
that
case.
Can work really well. Although I'm not sure personally, for instance, there are people who live blog events. I'm not sure that that's necessarily the best use of their time there either.
Yeah, there are certain events that people are just so hungry for the information, like, you know, when Steve Jobs is up giving his dog and pony show on fill in the blank new thing. That's one thing, but you know, I'd like to shift this a little bit because I know we have limited time with you this morning, Rachel. But one of the things that I'd sent out when we were setting this show up was the Twitter for Terrorists article that was in Wired, and you know, about spy fears, Twitter terrorists, cell phone jihadists, and the article was really about this 304th Military Intelligence Battalion report. That it was a presentation on the potential, you know, terrorist use of Twitter. And, you know, and as I read through that and then saw all of these blog conversations and Twitter discussions about the use of Twitter in this kind of a negative way, and I thought, wait a minute. You know, any terrorist worth his or her salt is not going to use a public channel. Or they're going to use group SMS, so they're going to, you know, they're going to use Yammer, the new, group. I mean, who knows? But what are your thoughts about this? And also, what are you seeing that might potentially be some big negatives with the use of Twitter?
Well, I think, at least my impression from the article, and obviously I'm not in the intelligence community, so I may have a slightly different perspective than the folks who are fighting terrorists directly, is that any medium that you look at can be used for good and evil. So I don't think that you have to throw the Twitter out with the terrorists. Is there potential to use Twitter for bad things? Absolutely. Is there potential to use it for good things? Absolutely. So I don't know that you have to segment it out, just like, you know, I think with early blogging, people said, oh, blogging is just a bunch of crackpots in their underpants. I think that throws out the medium rather than looking at different ways you can use it.
Mm-hmm. And what are your thoughts, Julio?
Yeah, I'm I think along the same lines, I just kind of, my eyes kind of roll because every time there's a new form of communication or a new technology, you know, something new comes on the scene at some point, you know, somebody in government or somebody in politics, they get bent out of shape about, you know, the horrible uses this can be put to. And they do have a point. It can be put to horrible uses, but it's a tool, it's a medium. It's just something that can be molded in any number of ways. Twitter, the unique thing about Twitter is that it's very simple, very Spartan, and it's simplicity. It means that it's highly adaptable. And so, you know, certainly it can be used for some nefarious purposes, but to sort of focus a lot of attention on that and sort of lose sight of the fact that it's the terrorists that are really the problem, not necessarily the communications tools they're using, is a little short-sighted, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's really funny is I have a hard time imagining, you know, terrorists who seem to have a hard time plugging in a percolator and making a cup of coffee to really think that they're early adopters.
Is that some of the wit that we've heard about?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you think about it, at least all the images that we see of terrorists are, you know, squatting in a cave with, you know, I can't imagine that Twitter has become, hey, I got this new iPhone. Let's Twitter.
Oh, although I've read that, you know, Osama bin Laden and his folks at some point relied fairly heavily on satellite phones, but the U.S. got so good about monitoring that traffic that they had to suppress that use. So maybe there's some speculation in our government that now that they can't use satellite phones, maybe they're switching to other things like, good Lord, Twitter, you know, so I don't know.
Well, I mean, clearly it's as Julio pointed out, any new form of communication can be used for good and for evil. So it's a matter of how we choose to participate.
Well, having been involved in the video game business back in the early 80s and hearing all of the hand-wringing and, you know, family institutes talking about how this was going to corrupt and destroy our children, and then the resurgence of the video game business in the early 90s, and the same thing was going to happen. And you keep hearing it, and so far I haven't really seen this generation, you know, turning into millions of mass murderers or anything. I mean, it just hasn't happened. So, I mean, you have to look at the downsides. There's no question, but
everything in moderation.
Yeah, yeah.
And well, that's a problem with Twitter. You get so addicted sometimes that you have to set limits. I there are times I find myself at work, you know, focused so much on Twitter that I have to literally tear myself away and, you know, do other things. So Twitter is a highly addictive pastime, and you have to impose some discipline on yourself.
Well, and that's one of the things that, you know, if I were going to look at any negative with Twitter, there are times when I turn off Twirl. I use that Adobe Air app because then I can monitor both Minivate and my own feed, my own account. And I do find that, you know, with Growl on macOS 10, that, you know, I'm constantly getting these pop-ups, even though I've turned the sound off whenever there's a notification. I'm like you with that, Julio. I mean, there are times when I have to write something and I just have to turn it all off. I have to shut down IM. I have to turn off everything. Because it is a constant flow and a constant stream.
And that's one of the reasons I absolutely do not use desktop Twitter software. I refuse. I just keep it in the browser because that sets a limit. I have to, you know, fire up the browser. I have to pull up the page. There are a couple of steps that I have to go through, and it's inconvenient enough that Twitter doesn't become so easy that it's always in my face. So I do it on the web only, and that sort of keeps it sort of in perspective for me. But what I find, the other thing I find a little problematic is Twitter has become another communication channel in terms of communicating directly with people. There's email, there's instant messaging, and now there's this whole Twitter direct messaging situation. This is a little bit of a problem for me because it's creating a fragmentation problem. There are all these different communication silos that I have to monitor, and it's not all integrated.
Right.
And I'm waiting for somebody really smart to invent the ultimate messaging client that does the email, does the instant messaging, does the the Twitter DMing all in one interface, because the having to check, I have multiple Twitter accounts and I have to check, you know, DM traffic on all of them, plus my email, plus my instant messaging. So, you know, this is a real problem. Somebody has to fix this.
Yep.
And I would add to that, somebody should fix to add the RSS feeds into that, because that's the other real time suck. I check out a lot of political blogs, and so I find myself not only checking my email, I'm not instant messaging, checking my Twitter accounts, checking my RSS feeds. It does get a little tiring. And sometimes, frankly, when I have a story to write, I will turn all that off, not only close Twitter, I will close my browser, I will close my email application, and I will turn off my BlackBerry, and sometimes even unplug my phone, because sometimes you really have to get something else done.
Yep,
exactly. You know, Julia, that was actually a great suggestion for an application, because it's true.
And there's one application called Digsby. It's available for Windows now and soon for the Mac. That gets part of the way there, because it has a social media integration and also flags you on new emails. But from what I've been able to learn about it, doesn't get all the way there in terms of what I need. I just need, you know, somebody to, you know, for instance, create the equivalent of Mail app on the Mac that's an email client, but will also sort of pull in all the Twitter communication. So, mm-hmm.
Well, I guess what you could do is mail.app on the Mac does have an RSS reader. So you could subscribe to your Twitter RSS feed. That gives you part of the way there.
Oh, I've actually done that. Yeah.
Well,
so Twitter is such a new medium that people are figuring out ways to sort of turbocharge it. Like, I'm just amazed at the sheer number of services and software tools and widgets and things that people have just sort of added, layered onto the Twitter ecosystem, the Twitterverse, as it were. It's really remarkable to watch.
Have you gone to twitter.pbwiki.com and looked at all the mashups and so on?
I mean, yes.
I mean, it's, you know, unfortunately, Comic Twit is about destroyed Twitter with all the traffic, but had to throw that in for Phil.
Thank you so much.
But all, you know, all these people who are building upon the API in Twitter so that you can create all these new mashups. I mean, it's just amazing.
And it's one of the reasons that Twitter is probably going to stick around, because there's a lot of concern about Twitter not making money. You know, what's the business model? But a couple of things have happened with Twitter. Number one, there's a critical mass of users that depend on this thing and will scream bloody murder if it goes away. And number two, so many people have added, you know, their two cents in terms of new functionality, in terms of software and services and mashups and widgets and so forth. And so I'm hoping, you know, the Twitter founders sort of figure out how to make money at some point. But I'm not too worried anymore about, like, Twitter, like, vanishing off the face of the earth, because it's become just too important.
Twitter occasionally does vanish. One of my worries, particularly with MN Votes, occasionally Twitter goes down. And I experienced that very briefly this morning as I was checking my Twitter traps. And so on election night, if lots of people are using it to tweet whatever their experience is, there may be slight blackouts. And Julio probably knows more about the mechanics than you all do, too, than I do. But I'm a little worried that the medium will fail us the way it has briefly in the past.
I have noticed, though, and the numbers bear this out, that Twitter has become more reliable over time. Several months ago, you know, over the summer, it was literally going down for you know, hours out of every week. Or yeah, the numbers were you know, simply unacceptable. And those have steadily improved. The reliability of Twitter has steadily improved. But the election night, you know, being a day of historic proportions, it's going to be the ultimate to us for test for Twitter. It's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Well, here's a question for both of you. One of the things, you know, the good news about Twitter is you do have this stream, and you can come into this stream at any point in time. But I also find that there are people, and you clearly are doing this on Political Animal, is putting in a lot of time. I mean, there's a lot of URLs in there that will lead people to different things. And I find there are some people I follow, like Tim O'Reilly, the publisher, who retweets. He sends out somebody's tweet that he thinks is of interest to the people that follow him. And almost everything that he does has some little nugget of value. I mean, he's not saying, hey, I had a Cinnabon today and it dripped onto my pants. And instead, he's got a URL in there of some big thought, where he retweets some big thought from someone else. And I find sometimes that I'll come into something midstream and I might not have looked at Twitter for, 6 hours. And I'm hitting older to go back and find and see if there was anything of interest. How are you going about trying to archive or capture and keep that value? Are you putting it into posts? Are you doing the automatic posting of your Twitter feed? Or how are you doing that?
Well, I'm not sure I do any integration. My view is that Twitter and my blog are distinct entities with, in many cases, different audiences. And so I don't know that I document anything Twitter on my blog, or if that's what you're getting at. I notice that sometimes people automatically create blog posts that sort of summarize their Twitter activity. I've seen some people do that. I find that not very helpful and even a little annoying. Because I don't, if I'm reading somebody's blog post, I want to know what they think or what they have to say in a blog context. And I may already be following them on Twitter, and I listen to their Twitter stuff on Twitter, and I listen to their blog stuff on their blog. And when the stuff gets all mixed together, I get a little cranky.
Okay. Well, the reason I asked that question was that was kind of a segue into your book.
Okay.
And the reason it was a segue.
And then at that point, I'll jump off.
Okay. Well, Rachel, thank you so much for joining today.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and everyone enjoy this lovely Saturday.
Yeah, no kidding.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Rachel.
And the reason that there was a segue into your book is that I've had two clients ask me specifically about, if we're sending out notices and notifications and alerts and things of that nature, we want to be able to archive and collate that somewhere. It needs to be somewhere. So can you talk about, maybe not to give all the spoilers of your book, but talk about the motivation? I mean, what brought you to writing it? I mean, what was the need that you saw? That you had, obviously, you're just a tweeting animal. I mean, you're really into the game and doing a lot, and it's fun to follow you. And how did you turn that into the book?
Well, I was interested enough in Twitter that I became intrigued by the fact that companies, businesses were starting to use Twitter for various purposes. I found that kind of interesting. And I put out some feelers for a Pioneer Press, a story that I was planning to do on that topic. And the person who became my publisher saw those feelers and actually gave me a call and said, "Hey, I've considered turning this into a book." And that's how that started. So the book part wasn't my idea. It was the publisher getting in touch with me, and my initial reaction was, geez, I don't have time for this. Are you nuts? Write a book. And I literally did not have time for it, but then I decided, what the hell. And I used the bulk of my vacation time, this past year over the summer to, sit down and bang this thing out. I'm glad I did. It was a really interesting experience for me.
Well, I'll tell you, it was just looking at the synopsis of the chapters and so forth, and the things that you're hitting, at the social media breakfast, it's not only interesting to listen to people talk and present, but it's more interesting to talk to people in the audience that are for the most part representing their companies and are there to try to figure out how to get in the game in a bigger way and how to leverage all of not just this new communication channel, but all social media communication channels. And what are you seeing in terms of acceptance of the message of companies not only making sure that they're searching for their brand and having, you know, awareness of how their brand is being discussed, but also how they're getting in the game and actually using it?
Well, the thing that, and I'll repeat a point I made earlier in this conversation. Twitter is very simple. It's the essence of simplicity, and simplicity is power because something simple can be adapted in many ways. It's malleable, it's adaptable, and for businesses, this is good because they can take this very simple medium and they can use it in a dizzying variety of ways. And what I found really interesting in my research for the book is that there's no pattern. There are huge companies using Twitter. There are small companies using Twitter. It runs the gamut, and they all use Twitter in just a mind-boggling variety of ways. So some of them are just on Twitter. They're kind of lurking. They're listening. They're looking for mentions of their names. They're sort of monitoring conversations about what is said about them, but they don't jump in and participate. Other companies go to the complete opposite extreme, and they're Twitter maniacs. They're on their, you know, Twittering nonstop, engaging their customers, having conversations with their customers. Some of them are customer service. They're trying to help their customers. Others sort of are leery of trying to solve problems on Twitter, but they do enjoy having that back and forth, you know, conversations. And in many cases, those conversations have nothing to do necessarily with the company's products. They're just out there creating relationships and creating goodwill, which they hope at some point will translate into, you know, improvement on the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
Julio, clearly Twitter will be this, you know, always be this way to communicate with customers, will always be a way to start conversations. Do you see Twitter actually becoming a revenue stream in and of itself for a business?
That's a darn good question, because Twitter itself, you know, the company hasn't figured out how to make money. So how the hell are any companies are using Twitter going to make money? And I think we're so early in the game that I don't think that question can be answered. Is this going to pay off in the long run? And if we don't know if it's going to pay off in the long run, is it even worth doing? A lot of those questions are being asked at companies. And many people that I interviewed for my book told me that their bosses, you know, say this is a waste of time because you can't tell me what's the ROI on this, what's the return of investment on this, and it's a hard thing to gauge. And I think my opinion is that people have to refocus a little bit and not necessarily document, you know, exactly how this is going to pay off in terms of dollar signs, but just note the fact that you're out there creating relationships with your customer. Those relationships are a different kind of investment, a different kind of payoff, and they're really important.
Well, I think about all of these. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Graham.
I was going to say another way that companies are if not going to be making money with Twitter, but finding that they can gain advantage from productivity advancements is applications like Yammer, where Twitter-like applications are being used within companies to improve communications and productivity of employees, of customers, you know, private Twitter channels, if you will, Twitter-like channels, and in fact, there are several companies that have developed apps already to use internally that are very much Twitter-like. So Twitter has inspired a lot of that kind of activity, and we even have one local company, One Place. Full disclosure, I do some work with these folks that are going to be introducing a new Twitter-like feature for their work management system, where teams, virtual teams, or, you know, teams within four walls of a company can do all their work within a system for team collaboration, project management, and personal productivity with Twitter-like features of that system now soon coming here. So just wanted to put that mention in.
That's a really good point. And in some cases, at certain companies, both things are in fact happening. Our very own Best Buy is a really good example of that, because if you notice on Twitter, there's a lot of Best Buy related Twitter activity. Top executives are Twittering. The managers of individual stores are Twittering. There's this store manager in Tulsa, Oklahoma, for God's sake, she's a Twitter natural. She's really, really cool. And so people at all levels at Best Buy are Twittering. But at the same time, behind the scenes, there are some social media folks there at Best Buy who are creating a Twitter-like internal communication mechanism that's going to serve a number of very vital internal communications needs, and they're inspired by Twitter, and they're sort of building something that's very Twitter-like, and it's going to be separate and distinct from Twitter itself. So Twitter, in some cases, is good at Best Buy for having those external conversations with customers and outsiders and so on and so forth. And at the same time, they're going to have this Twitter-like ecosystem internally for their team and employee communication.
Yep. Well, speaking of Best Buy, just to pass along some information here, Steve Bent just posted a tweet linking to a Brian Solis post about Twitter tools for community and communication professionals. And it's amazing to see the long, long, long list of tools, not just applications, but tools that help monitor and be part of the Twitter community.
Yeah, exactly.
This is what's amazing about Twitter. They've really created an ecosystem, you know, with the open API, you know, the value that's been created by Twitter, even though they don't have revenues per se, they have high valuation already. Seems like I've read numbers like 80 or 100 million or something outrageous like that for it not producing revenues or profits. Anywhere close to it, actually. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Twitter, whether we're going to see it get acquired by some large company that starts with G or Y or M or something, you know. It will be one of the stories of 2009, maybe, about what's going to happen to this business entity called Twitter.
Yeah, well, let's just hope they don't do what they did with Grand Central when they bought Grand Central and it's essentially vanished. I mean, it's still there. It still works, but.
Well, is Twitter really a business entity? They really haven't done anything to monetize the service at all.
Right. Nope. And that's the interesting thing. Of all of these services that have popped up, and, you know, look, I speak from a little bit of experience on Comic Twit. You know, what is it? What is the way that we're going to make money doing this? It's fun. There's no doubt about it. But what is the business app?
It's selling George Carlin LPs, I think.
That's got to be it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know what, though?
That's only going to go so far. He's dead, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know what, though, is I can't tell you how many conversations I've been in where people have looked at Twitter and said, it's a feature, not a company. And to some degree, what you just said, Graham, about one place, and then you think about Yammer, and then you think about what Best Buy is doing, building their own so they can use it internally so it's not a public communication channel, does add credence to that. I know that kind of opinion that it's, but still it's, you know, talk about first mover advantage. I mean, you know, there are, you know, the open source alternatives and there are other alternatives out there, but when anybody thinks of this conceptually, it's all Twitter.
But I was having a conversation with, Biz Stone, one of the, Twitter founders, and he was telling me that next year he wasn't firm on the details, but there's already some conversations happening at Twitter HQ about starting to actually charge companies who use Twitter for company stuff. You know, if you're a large organization and you're using Twitter for business, that will you will be put in a slightly different category than average individual users just using it for personal use. And there may be some actual charging of money occurring, sometime next year.
Well, did they talk about, I mean, obviously, if they're going to do that, they would probably have, some eyes like search and other kinds of analytical tools on top of it for business users.
Yeah, he wasn't, again, he wasn't very specific on details, but he was saying, you know, the businesses are deriving a lot of value, you know, monetary and other ways from Twitter. They're getting a lot out of it as organizations. So there's a revenue model, a revenue stream potentially there for Twitter. And, you know, the companies, you know, certainly can afford to pay a little money to keep using this tool that they found so valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. So the subscription model is very much real, and companies will pay for it. And, you know, online so-called SaaS applications, software as a service, it's a big business, only getting bigger. And companies will pay for legitimate, you know, useful applications online by the month, you know, buy it by the drink, you know, sign up for 12 months, get a break, you know, go month to month, you pay a little more, you know, it's going to happen. And there probably already are Twitter-like apps that are being sold that way. I'm not really sure. How's Yammer doing it, Steve? Have you looked to see what their subscription?
No, I have not. I haven't delved into them. No, but they, you know, they have that group.
They're not giving it away for free.
No. Well, they have that group function now as part of it, and I'm assuming that they're going to, you know, have some monetization model around that. But, you know, we're coming up on the edge of the end of the show here, and one of the things, Julio, that you had in your book were some use cases, some case studies of companies that have effectively used it. And this is kind of putting you on the spot, but what was your favorite story out of all the research you did leading up to the book? What was your favorite story?
Well, I'm very impressed with, I'll reel off a couple. Comcast is very good on the customer service side because this Frank Eliason guy, he's monitoring conversations about Twitter. And if people are having trouble with their connections and they say so on Twitter, he'll very often jump in and try to help them out. And he's actually done that for me. I've griped about my Comcast service on Twitter. And for God's sake, my phone literally rang 5 minutes later and it was Frank on the phone. It's very spooky. Zappos, you know, the online retailer, has sort of woven Twitter into its the very fabric of its existence. So, you know, a lot of its employees are Twittering and they're evangelizing, you know, the company out there. I like Dell. Dell is one of my favorites because they're a large organization and they've decided they're going to use Twitter, but they're not going to use it just this one way. They're going to create a whole bunch of Twitter accounts, and those Twitter accounts are going to do different things. There's a Twitter account for selling stuff. It just flags people on deals, on equipment. There are other Twitter accounts are more conversational. There are Twitter accounts in different countries for Dell. There are Twitter accounts in different languages. And it's part of a larger, you know, social media strategy. So Dell has been very good about that. This isn't in my book. It's actually part of a story I'm working on for the Pioneer Press. But there's a local company called Nabit. I don't know if you've heard of those guys.
Yeah. Nabit. Phil did a story on them on Minovate. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, Nabit. So go look for that on Minovate. But Nabit has. I looked for examples of Minnesota companies on Twitter for this story that I'm doing for the paper, which is going to run in a couple of weeks, and I came up with a very long list of Minnesota companies that are on Twitter, but most of those Twitter accounts have followings, you know, perhaps in the dozens or you know, possibly the hundreds. Nabit is an exception. They're well past the thousand mark, and that is a testament to the dogged shoe leather of a particular staffer at Nabit called Allison, with some guidance from a PR agency that Nabit has. She's been an animal in terms of just building a following by just getting out there and evangelizing the company. And I've been very impressed with the work she's done. And this is just sheer determination to build a following. And this is the kind of enthusiasm and energy that is needed at companies to make Twitter really work. Twitter is not just going to work because you have to put a little effort into it, which is what I do here at the Pioneer Press. I work at it. I work very hard at it. And this Allison, I'm blanking out on her last name. I apologize, Allison. She's been very, very good about, through sheer determination, building a following for the company. So that is a success story that doesn't just happen. You have to work at it.
Well, let me ask you a question real quick, and I know we're running out of time, Steve, but Julio, the fact that Nabit is really about driving subscribers to the Nabit, the actual Nabit site and not necessarily to their Twitter feed, is it translating over to not only more Twitter followers, but more subscribers to Nabit?
Well, I'll answer that in two ways. Number one, Nabit needs to build enthusiasm for its brand and needs to make more and more people aware of it so that they'll get more users. Twitter is a way to do that. Allison goes out and she talks to music bloggers and technology bloggers. Just anybody that is blogging, for instance, in an area that is relevant to the potential Nabit audience. And those bloggers in many, if not most cases, also have Twitter feeds, so she'll follow them. Those people will follow her back. And this is how buzz, this is how word of mouth gets started. The other interesting thing at Nabit is also integrated into the service itself. So if you're listening to the radio and you hear a song you like and you have Nabit set up on your phone and you click to, which corresponds to that particular station, sort of nab the song and save the song for future purchase. If you have your account set up the right way, a tweet is automatically generated and tells all of your Twitter followers, I just nabbed this particular song. Here's a link. If that song interests you, you can also click and buy the song and find out about Nabit. So there's a hook. There's a hook that sort of integrates Twitter and Nabit so that they work together. So I think that's kind of ingenious.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
So that's an example of a local company that sort of gets Twitter and is sort of brainstorming how can we make Twitter work for us in a way that fits our unique business culture and Nabit has totally nailed that, in my opinion.
Excellent.
Well, it's bound to bring up more stories too. I mean, people writing about them, whether it's bloggers or traditional media, you know, that are going to be picking up on what they're doing. So that's a big value to them from a marketing standpoint.
And then my book is just filled with examples. There's this a PR agency, Sterling Cross Communications, here in the Twin Cities. They did something very interesting. They are doing PR for a local restaurant and microbrewery called Moto I in Minneapolis. And they have had a Twitter feed going where they didn't reveal what this restaurant was about. They were just kind of dropping little hints and little teases. There's this great thing, you know, coming to Minneapolis, and it was a way to sort of build buzz for the restaurant. And I'll tell you quite frankly, this was an interesting experiment, not quite as successful as Nabit has become. They didn't build quite the amount of followers. But it was ingenious. It was very, very clever. It's an example of people thinking outside the box and using Twitter in creative ways, trying new things, you know, throwing things against the wall to see what will stick. And I'm very impressed by that. My book is just filled with case studies like that of the sheer wide variety of ways Twitter can be used in a business context.
Fabulous. Okay, well, I think we should probably end today's show, but I'm so sorry, I have to ask you one last question. I'm curious, in terms of percentage of sales, are more people buying the paperback or buying the ebook?
You mean my book?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, well, the book is literally about to be released, so we're just pre-release of the book here. It's going to be out in a few weeks, and I'm not, my publisher typically offers both options for his book, and I'm not sure what the percentage is on that. It's a good question. I'll ask my publisher the next time I talk to him.
Just curious.
The book, you can find out about the book by going to twitin.biz, that's twitin.biz.
Yep, I'll put it in the show notes. That'll be great. Well, Julio, thank you very much, and thanks to the other members of the gang, and we will talk to you guys soon.
Thanks very much.
Over and out.
Take care.